Welcome to the KP Podcast, where we talk about the business of real estate, a podcast about leveraging opportunities, growing your business, and experiencing financial freedom. Here are your hosts, Keith Anderson and Peter Kamboukos.
All right, guys, today we're coming to you talking to you about why you should sell your stocks now and invest in real estate. This is Pete. I'm here with Keith. We're coming to you from the Forum in the KP Studios. And Keith, this is a super important topic and something that's very timely right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of pulling a little bit about what we talked about last time. We were discussing just the different tax plans, the different strategies, and kind of how it's affecting our prices, our supply. And so it kind of carried us into this discussion of like, well, with all these changes coming, with all these things happening, where are we putting our money? Like, what are we doing? You know, and at the end of the day, a lot of the questions I get from people are, do we have it in the stock market? Where, you know, do we invest in businesses? Do we go out, buy gold and hide ourselves in a hole? Like, there's a lot of different methods out here of trying to figure out what we need to do with our money. And that's a constant, constant conversation with people for the end of time. Everybody's going to ask, okay, I made the money. What do I do with it now? There's two different types of individuals in that sense. It's, okay, I need to make money to survive, pay the bills, do that lifestyle, and get to a place where then I have excess capital that I can invest and grow and build something long term. So that being said, this is going to be a conversation on why the stock market is per se not the best place right now to put your money.
Right. So, and before we get into the details of that, disclaimer, everybody, Keith and I are not investment advisors. Do your own research, but you've got our opinions. This is what we're doing. And here's our opinions on what's going on right now. So with that, why do we say that you should sell your stocks now and invest in real estate? What do we hear, right? We hear people going, well, aren't the prices up so high already? Is this a good time to invest? We would still say, yeah, we probably still got room to go. And part of the reason of what you're looking at is that you've got two of the most powerful forces in economics right now working on one side of the equation, if you will, and you want to be on the same side of the equation. You want to be aligned, for lack of a better word, with these powerful forces.
So you're saying you want to find yourself in the majority, not the minority?
Not necessarily the majority.
Okay.
You want to find yourself with the people that have the power or ability to influence what is happening in the U.S. economy.
So you're basically saying you want to find your way to be a Laker because LeBron James is going to move the course of the NBA somewhere or another, essentially.
Sure, we could go with that. I like how Keith weaves in a little NBA talk in this.
You want to be Roger Goodell's friend, in essence. You want to be the guy that you want to be on the NFLPA head guy. You want to be around where the decisions are being made and follow suit.
That's a good way to put it. If we're talking about the NFL, Goodell's going to set these rules, right?
Okay.
So you want to potentially set your team up knowing that the guys that are making the rules are going to put certain things in place. Well, you better set your team up best to take advantage of the rules that they're going to put in place.
So you can score.
Because, you can't change the rules, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can't fight them. He's going to put those rules in. That's what he's doing. So best thing for you to do is figure out, well, what is he doing? Let me get on the same page.
Okay.
So what are we talking about here and who are these forces? So what we're talking about is the U.S. government and the Federal Reserve. Okay. Thing to keep in mind is the U.S. government today, Keith, in 2021, is the largest debtor in the history of the world.
That's a fun place to be.
It's quite the title, right?
The largest debtor. So we are in the most debt?
In the history of the world.
History of the world. Hey, ever. We have a record.
We do have a record.
We have a record.
I don't know if it's a record we want, but we have a record.
It reminds me kind of a record. Like, what's his name? The guy that eats all the hot dogs every single year and crushes it?
Oh, Kobayashi?
Yeah, whoever it is.
Or Joey Chestnut?
Joey Chestnut. It's like a Joey Chestnut record. Like, you know he's going to go puke his guts out. And we're sitting with the largest amount of debt. The largest amount of things eaten in an under an hour type concept.
Right. Now, if you and I had the largest amount of debt, we'd be in trouble, right? Because you and I, we have to figure out a way to pay that back. We got to get all our bills going. Yeah. The luxury that the U.S. government and the Fed has is that they control the money printing. They control the army. Yeah. So they got all the guns and all the money.
So let's talk about that then, because some of us, like, we look at government, we look at big government and trying to understand what that concept is and what that is. And that's the political powers that you see in place. You see a lot of the tax bills, Congress, things like that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, what, Pete, some people don't necessarily understand, what is the Federal Reserve? It sounds like this big, the Fed. You hear this fun name for it. It sounds catchy. Yeah. Oh, I want to be part of the Fed. Like, Fed sounds cool, but what really is the Fed and its impact and role in our government?
That's a good point, because a lot of people hear Federal Reserve and they assume that it's a government entity, right?
Or
government
bank. Or they think it's like Fort Knox. Like, when I used to think of the Fed, I was thinking, oh, it's like Fort Knox. Like, it's a bunch of gold sitting in a room. That's the Fed, right? Like, it's the Reserve.
So the funny part about the Federal Reserve is that they're neither federal nor a reserve.
Huh. So it's a pointless name.
So they are not. So they are a private entity.
Okay.
So they are not a government entity. They're officials, the Federal Reserve Chairman and the Board of Governors there that make the decisions. Jerome Powell's the Federal Reserve. Most people have probably heard his name right now. The chairman, he is appointed by the government, but they are not a government agency. They're not technically accountable to anybody. And if you want to think about, you know, who the best way to describe what they are is they're the banker's bank. Okay. So they are the ones that oversee, you know, all of the banks in the country, if you will. Mm-hmm. When the banks need money, they're borrowing that money from the Fed. The Fed can set the rules on, you know, how much reserves the banks need to have. The Fed can create these bank reserves, et cetera. So essentially, right now, we have the U.S. government and the Fed working together, because as we've gone through this, you know, the shutdowns, and we've gone through
the COVID processes,
all of this stuff,
the businesses,
stimulus money, all of this stuff. The Fed has been out there. They're the ones that control the Fed. We always hear that they're lowering rates. Is the Fed raising or lowering rates? Well, that's the rate that the banks borrow from. It ends up affecting in our world, the mortgage rates and what they loan at. Yep. And so, you know, they're indirectly affecting those, but now they've been working together through all this to make sure that we're putting more money into the system, that the banks have plenty of liquidity, that they've got funds that they can lend, that the government's got stimulus money that they can send out. And so essentially what we're getting and what we've been seeing, what we've talked about here recently in many podcasts and what everyone's experiencing with these increasing house prices is we're getting this inflation and we're continuing to see this money printing. So These are just facts. This is what we're seeing. This is what's happening. And that's why we say you want to be on the right part of that, on the right side of that, if you will.
So in essence, if I'm comparing this to, you know, real life terms, if you're playing a game of Monopoly, you want to be as close to the bank as you can. It's easier for you to steal those 50s.
That's a good way to
put
it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you want to be as close to that connection as you possibly can.
And that is, you know, it's funny you bring up Monopoly. I don't know if how many people, because I know I've seen some people tweet this image recently, which is funny. So if you ever look at the instructions on Monopoly, one of the you know, I think it's like the frequently asked questions is, what if the bank runs out of money in Monopoly? What do you do? And the answer in the Monopoly instructions is the bank never runs out of money. If we run out of those bills, you simply make more. Just get some pieces of paper and make money. And people are putting this out there because this is exactly how the Federal Reserve and our government works.
Yes. So the Monopoly knew what the Fed was going to do.
That's exactly it.
Years
it
ago.
Never runs out of money. We just create more out of nothing. Just grab some paper and we create more
Whatever
money.
What do you
want to
do?
We just make more.
We just print it. Which gets us to our next point, I guess, if you will, is what have we seen recently with concept of inflation, money printing, trying to keep, I want to say, the ship going smoothly. Because I think a lot of the times we look at it as you need controversy, you need some conflict in order to to grow in a healthy way. Sometimes when you want to avoid those tough decisions, those tough discussions and things, you can kind of keep the ship going and say, hey, you know what? We don't want to deal with these problems. We don't want to deal with these things. Let's just keep this thing running smoothly during a time of issues or crisis or, I don't know, you know, some sort of a virus comes through. Like those things happen and the Fed is looking at it and the government's looking at it. How do we get through this with the least amount of turmoil, issues and things?
Right.
And that's kind of where you have inverse factors affecting things.
Yeah, they're saying we don't want things to necessarily shut down. We don't want unrest. You know, if we're businesses are shut down and people can't work, can't pay their bills. So like we've said, you know, you've got stimulus money going in there, the Fed printing more money, creating more reserves, creating more liquidity in the system, if you will. So more money going out there is the easiest way to think about it. Now, what's that caused is not only inflation in all the real economy, if you will, but it's caused stocks to skyrocket. You see this and most people are surprised by, man, how could we shut down the economy and the stock market's hitting all-time highs?
How did it go from super low to that quickly recover?
Especially if everything's closed and shut down half the time and we've got all these supply chain issues. Well, you've got to remember what we also have is a system that is creating tons of extra money, tons of extra liquidity, and that drives stock prices up because you've got more money now chasing these. Yeah. The money's got to go somewhere. And like you said, especially if it's going into banks and investment banks, they're putting those into investments. They're driving up those prices. And if you look at what the Fed's been doing now for over a year, not only with the money that the government's been putting out there and the reserves that they're putting out there, but in addition to that, the Fed has been buying, just going into the market and buying about $120 billion worth of assets every month.
So hold on, you're telling me they're buying shares, if you will, or bonds or stocks?
They're buying treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. Now, think about what that means. And I should add, for a time there, they were buying corporate paper. So if they're buying any of these, okay, so you have U.S. treasuries, which come from the government, corporate bonds, which come from corporations, obviously, and mortgage-backed securities, which come from mortgage lenders. Well, if the Fed's buying it, then the money they're buying it with is new money that's necessarily going into the system. Or another way to think about it is it's not money that's leaving the system. So they're pulling those assets out of the system and leaving the money in, which is creating more inflation, more money, more stuff in the system.
So let me get this right, because what you said earlier, you know, and I'm just kind of trying to play from someone that would have a perspective of this doesn't really make sense to me, because if the Fed can just make money and they have no, they don't really have money. They just make money. Correct. In a sense. They shouldn't be, it's not like they have a 401k. They don't have a little stash of like, oh, we have this amount of money we can work with. They're just printing it. So then how necessarily can they buy things if it's not really their money in essence to begin with? They're just keeping balance of the market.
So a couple of things there with the Fed is they cannot directly inject money into the real economy.
Okay.
Yet.
Yes. Disclaimer, Pete said the word yet after inject money directly to the economy. Maybe a future podcast.
So what they can do is they can, when everybody says the Fed is printing money, what they are doing is creating additional bank reserves. Okay. So what that means is they are creating, they are taking things off of, let's say, you know, Chase or Citibank or Wells Fargo. They're taking things off of their balance sheet and they're creating new reserves or giving reserves to those banks. So those banks have more ability to lend out money.
Okay.
When banks make loans, say on a mortgage, that money didn't exist before they gave you the mortgage. So that increase in debt or giving out commercial banks, giving out loans is traditionally what has created new money. So every time loans get created, debt gets created and more money gets into the system. So it's the banks actually doing that. The Fed is backing them up. What we're actually seeing now is even one step further. Because the Fed can't inject money directly into the real economy, what they also can do is increase their balance sheet by doing, say, if the government wants to spend, okay, they want to send out stimulus checks to everybody, right?
Yeah.
But they don't have any money. So what the bank-
the biggest thing in debt, right?
What the government has to do is they'll issue treasuries or debt and banks or other people can buy that and then they'll have the money to send out. Well, another way to do it is, well, I should back up and say in that way, let's say they issue treasuries and Chase buys those treasuries. Well, the government has the money and they can send out the stimulus checks. But Chase had to use some of their money or some of their reserves to do that. So that money had to come out of the system. What the Fed is doing now is they're buying the treasuries.
So then, could technically the Fed just go buy those treasuries from Chase and just make it a big wheel? And
or they could buy them directly from the government. Either way. And so now they've created new money that didn't exist before and they're buying those. Therefore, when the government now spends that money and sends out a stimulus check, that's new money in the system. So essentially, indirectly, the Fed created new money. Or when we've got here, they go into the market and add this to their balance sheet. They're buying mortgage-backed securities and bonds with money that didn't exist before. So now that creates new money into the system.
So to bring us back to the terms of inflation here, if you're really thinking about all this stuff, I mean, I'm not a physics major or anything. I took a couple classes out there just to have you know. Mm-hmm. But with every opposing force, there's an equal and a greater force on the other side pushing back against it. That's what creates balance in our universe, our economy and everything. So right now you're telling me that there's just one way force going right now. So what's the check and balance set up on, like, when are those banks going to take on that debt or retake that stuff back? Like, what's the balance coming for these banks? Who's going to be paying back these treasuries? That's my only worry that I see here is like, okay, we're using all this money and we're claiming more and more debt and our government just continuing to grow this debt wheel up bigger and bigger. So what's the balance to that? Is that what's essentially causing the inflation in the market?
That's exactly what's causing the inflation. So yeah, if you've got more dollars chasing fewer goods, then you get what we see. We get inflation. We get housing prices that are going up. We've got cheap mortgages and cheap debt that's out there that's making it possible for people to spend more on their houses because their payments are less, and we're seeing those go up. And so what you've got in time where we see things like this is, to use a basic example, Keith, if we're sitting here at the forum and we've got three pizzas up here that are available and there's five people and each of them has, $10, well, there's only so much that we can spend on the pizza. But if all of a sudden somebody's going around and dropping $100 bills to these people that are looking at these pizzas, but we still only have three pizzas, guess what? It's the same three pizzas. But now each person says, well, I'll give you $100 for that pizza because I've just got more money now, but we still have the same amount of pizza.
Yeah.
So to put that out into the real world, it's the same thing. We didn't create any more houses. We actually had a low supply before, but now we've got more money that's less expensive with lower rates and it's driving up these prices. So in these times of inflation, like we have now, and this is where we're getting at today, you want hard assets because you're not creating any more of those
goods.
Then those goods and services than you normally would. It's not like all of a sudden, we just doubled the housing supply. We're lower and they're trying to do the best they can to keep up. But what's happening is you've got more money or cheaper money and more money chasing those same amount of houses, which is going to drive the prices up. So in these environments, you want to own hard assets like real estate.
So with stocks, you don't own necessarily something tangible that you can take and barter, sell, change, if you will, the same way you can a stock, because that valuation of that stock can fluctuate very quickly and very aggressively with the inflation of the market, but also inversely as well. And so the situation is when you have an investment in the stock market, you don't have debt against that asset. You have a purchased asset that is not a tangible one.
You also have no control over it. And then when you have a real asset, that stock, for example, if the liquidity changes or something goes on with it, it could go to zero in a day and it could be gone. And you have no control over that. It's extremely volatile. And we're looking at all-time highs, valuations that are super, super high right now. But when you've got a real asset like real estate, people need somewhere to live.
Always.
And we have a housing shortage still. We've had it for years. You've heard us. We've talked about it before. It didn't just happen. This has been here for a long time. Because you have a real asset, a tangible asset that people need to live somewhere, investment properties, and if you're on the same side as the Fed and the government, they keep issuing this money, which keeps driving more money into the system, which means it's driving those prices up because everybody wants those real things, cars, food, houses, whatever it is, driving all those prices up. Now, that's where you want to put your money, because if they're devaluing those money, meaning it's taking more dollars to buy the same thing, you want the things that everybody's trying to buy, because as your prices goes up, it helps keep your purchasing power up, if you will.
So now I've also heard this with inflation, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is debt good during an inflated market?
That is really good during an inflated market, especially when we've got cheap debt like we've got now that you can lock in for the next 30
years. So let's say you have a 3% interest rate, which again, we've seen a lot of those loans go out. and you have $500,000 worth of debt mm-hmm. on this asset, which is worth $650,000, let's say. Well, if the market inflates, does your debt change that with the inflation? Change.
That's the best
so
part.
So if you have a $500,000 with debt, but now your $1 is worth $2, or you, now $2 is worth that same $1, your debt didn't change.
Right.
So it should be twice as easy to pay off that debt right now than it was pre-inflation. Now, granted, that's a massive inflation if that became the case.
Right.
But even in a small scale, over time, debt is good with inflation because it gets easier and easier to pay off over time.
Leverage, the mortgages like you, if you take on the cheap debt, if you will, with mm-hmm. the low rates and you're locking it in mm-hmm. as inflation continues to increase, which we don't see any slowing down at the moment. As it continues to increase, you're right. It's going to make that debt cheaper because remember that your most valuable dollars are the dollars you have today. That candy bar is not going to cost the same next year as it does now. You're going to, if it's a dollar today, you're going to need $1.10 next year. We've all seen it. Everyone's seen it over the last year.
Go buy a candy bar and see how much it costs.
Anything. Go buy anything. Milk, and see what it was.
All the basic products. So then I got a question for you because this has always been a thought. I've always ever heard the word inflation, but in the economy, is there such thing as deflation?
There is.
Well, there is deflation.
Yeah, it could be deflation, I should
now,
say.
Now, has there ever been deflation?
For short periods of time. Okay. Now, this, Keith, gets to the key of what we're talking about. So I like how you're bringing it all the way around, and this is why we say, guys, get on the same side as the most powerful forces. Now, we just talked about what happens to debt in an inflationary environment. What would happen to debt in a deflationary environment?
Now, that would be making it harder to pay off the debt that you owe because technically, if there's less dollars to go against your debt, wouldn't leverage be more painful to an individual?
Right. Or if your dollars are going the other way, if they're getting more valuable, then your debt is becoming more expensive. So we said at the beginning that the U.S. government is the largest debtor in the history of the world.
So,
and they also control, Keith, the largest military in the history of the world. And, Keith, they have a Federal Reserve who they can appoint people to that is working with them on this. Do you think that our government will allow their debt to become harder for them to pay or easier?
Well, personally, I don't think that matters to them too much because it's pretty massive, but it's a huge point. Why would the government want a deflated market to strengthen the dollar and make debt more difficult for everyone? In fact, they're viewing inflation as this is kind of a positive little trick we put on the market over the last 100 years.
They need it. And so this is what we talk about, people, guys, nothing. And this is why we're putting this podcast out there. We're not telling you things that you can't see out there if you're paying attention. Mm-hmm. The Federal Reserve and the U.S. government is telling you what they're going to do. You should listen to them. The Fed has come out and say our policy is to have an average of 2% inflation. Their numbers are super low. And when they say average, they've been very clear. We're going to let it run way above that because we just want to average that. They are telling you that they are putting policies and making moves to let inflation run. They're flat out telling us. And so it's one of these things where you go, hey, we've got the government with all this debt. We know they want inflation. We've got the Federal Reserve telling you, we're going to set all the policies so that we have inflation. My point is you should listen to them because we're seeing inflation and they're going to continue to see it. And they're telling you that that's what they want.
So, I mean, if we're seeing stronger and stronger inflation, and again, it's good with leverage, it's good with low rates while we have them. Basically, it's not that we're necessarily saying investing in the stock market is bad. What we're trying to tell you is, are there better places to put your money? Is there better avenues that have a less risk and have a more opportunity based on the powers at hand? And so we're seeing that if rates are low and real estate is strong and supply is low and rates just continue to kind of hover down there when we know they're going to go up eventually, don't you think it's a great idea to have your money in a hard asset that's going to have all the positives working in its favor currently? Now, even if the market goes down in the next 5 to 10 years, which it very well could, which we could see a little bit of loss in prices, we could see a pullback, all that stuff could happen. If you're locking in rates at 3% that may never be there again for the next 10 years, you're always in a positive atmosphere for the next 10 years because you're never going to be able to buy a house, refi a house, do anything like that at that rate. Like you can't.
Yeah, in fact, and I'll give a shout out here to George Gammon and his podcast, even though he probably has no idea who we are. But the Rebel Catalyst guys, awesome podcast. Check it out. But George talks about this concept where he goes, today for him, the debt is more valuable than the house. He says, really what I'm after is to be able to lock in 30 years worth of
leverage debt.
Exactly, leverage and loan that is going to continue to be deflated or inflated away from me over time. The house just happens to be the best way for me to get that. Mm-hmm. And that makes a lot of sense. It really does. Because we're continuing to see this, as we continue to see that inflation, like you said, your debt become, you're paying in the future, you're paying back with cheaper dollars than you were today. If you took a loan out 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and the housing prices were half of what they are now, but you kept that 30-year loan, even with much higher rates. Think about what your payment is today compared to what you started 20 years ago. You were looking at it going, man, I got to buy this house for $200,000 and my mortgage is $700. Well, today, if you hang on to that debt, you're still paying $700. Yeah. And that house is probably worth double. And that mortgage is not a big deal anymore. Whereas at that time, it seemed like a really big deal. But because of inflation, it has become, those dollars have become less and less valuable. At the time, $700 might have been a huge number for you. Not anymore.
So you're telling people, go out there and get in debt.
I'm saying good debt right now.
Sure. Good debt. So that, and that's what's key. There's don't a big separation. You don't go get credit cards and get 10, 15, 20% interest and to go buy a car, to go buy a TV, a house. Like, you don't do that.
Well, those aren't assets either. That's correct. The important thing. You're offsetting it with an asset because the assets are going up with the inflation. So yeah, if you're spending it on consumer goods and consumer spending, you're left with nothing.
It's gone. It's it's going to deteriorate, but a house is always a valuable asset. It's always there. It's the land, the property is what you're investing in. It doesn't disappear. And we have insurance to protect it and we have things to keep things strong. So that being said, the further you go into debt in a strong market, as long as it's responsible leveraged debt, it can work for you in your favor versus you investing that same amount of capital into something like a stock market or into something that you can't be in debt for. So the other thing we've always talked about is like you could go buy gold and silver and these hard assets and then still go into debt against that hard asset. Leverage there are those, and you can leverage against those. And again, you're going to be able to do that. However, is your interest rate going to be 2.85? Probably not. It's most
likely. Can you get 5-to-1 leverage where you put 20% down and get 100% of the purchase price? Probably not.
And these are
the things.
Do you
get the tax advantages like you do with real estate? You get to deduct the mortgage, you get depreciation on investment real estate and expenses on investment real estate, help lower that tax burden. Again, things you don't get with other investments.
Yeah, are you able to refi every 6 months, pull the money out and buy another one? Like it's consistent strength in the market, letting your money move, letting the money work. So we wanna just talk about it today, guys, is we got to be thinking about where our money's going and is it conducive to this environment? Are we putting it in the right places to have the strongest impact on our lives? And I have a lot of people out there right now talking to me, family and just friends included, talking about, man, I just want to be debt free. And I question that, just saying, is all debt bad? And is that the most responsible decision when it comes to investing and growth in this market? Because right now we're in a really cool spot to take advantage of where we're at. A lot of the people that grew up, going through the 80s and the 90s, when they were in their prime, if you will, 20s and 30s, going through the 80s and 90s, they had 6, 7, 8+% interest rates that we won't see. Think about it. We're in an inflated market with interest rates lower than they've ever been. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing to think about when you look at debt is how can we leverage where we're at now, following the powers at hand to structure our investments to the highest level.
Yep. So to recap it, folks, I would say know the difference, like Keith was just talking about, between good debt and bad debt and what you're, using for investments. And I don't have faith in our government and the Fed for a lot of things, but I sure do have faith in their ability to spend and print money
and survive.
They're telling you that they're going to keep doing it. So let's get on the same side as them.
Absolutely. All right, guys, we appreciate everybody jumping on and checking it out. Continue to let us know if you have any questions or anything that you want to share and be a part of. We appreciate all your support and your feedback. Please follow us on KP Elite, The KP Elite for Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and we'd love to hear your reviews and your feedback as we continue to grow our channel.
All right, see you guys.
We'll be right back.